Hello, everybody. Welcome to Prevention on Point. My name is Brian.
And I'm Tara Eldred, and we have a guest today.
Really psyched to have JP Cahill with us. JP, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh,
thank
you.
So excited to be here.
You're a busy dude. It's so good to get you here. I feel very lucky.
Yeah, I feel like we've been talking about this for a while. I'm glad that we can get together.
If everybody only knew. Yeah.
It takes a lot of courage and a lot of generosity to talk in public about some of these things that we do.
I mean, I think it's so vitally important that we're having these public conversations. These conversations are happening in treatment provider systems, but really having conversations with the public and getting the word out there about co-occurring disorders, addictions, mental illness is so vitally important to building awareness and reducing some of the stigma that we're often faced with.
We talk about stigma on this show pretty much every time.
Yeah, and I think when we bring people in, we want to have those organic conversations and talk about how stigma really is one of the biggest hurdles of people receiving the proper care and treatment that is needed. As we know you, it's JP, but everybody should know it's John Cahill. And you are one of our community partners, and Brian and I felt it was really important to discuss the work you're doing, some wonderful things that you've accomplished recently, and just tell us a little bit about your role with Columbia County and what brings you to that role.
So, as you said, my name is JP Cahill. I'm the Dual Recovery Coordinator for Columbia County. And even before we get to all that, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm a brother, and I'm a person living in recovery from a substance use disorder and co-occurring mental illness. And that's really what brought me to this line of work, is to offer hope to those who still struggle. And it's what gives me great meaning in my life.
So as that role with Columbia County Mental Health, what are some services that you yourself offer those in the Columbia County community?
So my responsibility as tasked by the Office of Mental Health and the Office for Addiction Services and Supports is to improve quality of and access to care for co-occurring disorders.
And I think that's something that is discussed and has evolved over the years. I know that when I first got into field of, you know, what is now known as substance use disorder, right? Instead of, you know, unfortunately, we're still called addiction counselors, right? And our state name still holds that word addiction in it, which, you know, we see as a word that we try not to use as much. You know, people were MICA.
Mm-hmm.
We used to use that word, mentally ill, chemically addicted.
MICA, mentally ill, chemically addicted.
And if that doesn't have a negative connotation to it, I don't know what does. I mean, that is not a term that's really used in this day. But what are some services that you provide to families and individuals?
So my role really within the county is to develop the system of care for individuals with co-occurring disorders, because we have therapists, case managers, doctors, administrators who are all, you know, filling that need in whatever role that they might have. But you don't have somebody within the county who's really looking at the system of care as a whole, somebody who's identifying some of the gaps in care, and somebody who's identifying ways to fill those gaps. So I'm really taking the time to work with organizations around the county to identify some of those gaps and identify ways of filling them together.
I'm sure there's large gaps, but I'm wondering, is there also overlapping, or do you see services that are sometimes missed because a person with co-occurring disorders must have more providers than somebody that doesn't have co-occurring disorders? Is it difficult sometimes to bring all those partners to the table? Do you help facilitate one-stop shop type of thing, I guess is what I'm saying?
Well, I sit on many multidisciplinary treatment teams throughout the county, sit on various coalitions and task force where various organizations come to the same table and talk about some of these challenges that we're experiencing. And when we're having a hard time meeting the need of an individual with co-occurring disorders, we're also often troubleshooting ways together that we can meet that need, you know, whether it's something we offer or not, or ways that we might be able to create a position within the county to fill that need in the future.
things have definitely evolved, you know, over the past few years. I think we're coming out of our COVID coma,
mm-hmm.
and definitely looking at services that either need to work together or, right, like you said, gaps within those services. You know, you identified yourself as a person with a co-occurring disorder yourself. What made you want to work in the same field? You know, sometimes things can be almost too close to home, mm-hmm. or was that like your guiding force, I guess?
Yeah, I think for me, when I was in the early stages of my recovery and really looking at kind of a 10,000 foot view of my life and what I might want it to look like in the future, I realized that in my own struggles with addiction and mental illness, I wasn't sure who to turn to, who to talk to. I didn't have a person in my life that I can turn to for support. And I felt like, given my experiences and what I had been through, I had a lot to offer to other people who are struggling, to offer that hope and that light to somebody who might still be going through it. It was just something I felt like I couldn't live without giving back to. I couldn't see myself doing anything else and having a meaningful job.
Yeah, I mean, in the work you do is amazing, you know, so thank you for that. When it comes to co-occurring disorders, how difficult is it for somebody to actually get that diagnosis? I know sometimes, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it mental illness or was it a substance use disorder? What really delineates somebody to have a co-occurring disorder? Is that actually an official diagnosis, or is it two diagnoses in two separate worlds?
So when we're talking about what is a co-occurring disorder, it's often referred to as the coexistence of a mental illness and substance use disorder. But it can also include diagnosis of an intellectual disorder and or a physical chronic condition. So when we're talking about a co-occurring disorder and how it's diagnosed, often individuals are either being seen at the hospital, at an outpatient clinic, inpatient clinic. And like you said, there isn't a diagnosis for co-occurring disorders. So okay. Somebody might be diagnosed with depression disorder and an alcohol use disorder. So together, they're classified as a co-occurring disorder.
You know, and I think it's really important to identify what you just said, that it doesn't just have to be, you know, like what I said before, you know, MICA was a word that was used a lot in substance use disorder world about 20 years ago, that these co-occurring disorders are not just in the mental health arena. And that was something, you know, that is news to me. And I never looked outside that realm because, you know, my box is usually mental health and substance use disorder. Do you think there's enough education information around that?
We can always be doing a better job at getting the word out about co-occurring disorders and how different illnesses interact. Without that information, that awareness, that knowledge, it's hard to develop a system of care that meets the needs of the individuals that, you know, we're all seeing.
You know, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that didn't realize that. Do you find that you also have to educate providers in the field, you know, about co-occurring disorders in other populations that don't incur the, you know, with the mental health field? Is that part of your role too? Are you out there providing information to providers as well?
Absolutely. Throughout the week, I'm sitting in on clinical conferences at our local outpatient clinics. I'm also sitting on multidisciplinary treatment teams and field support teams and court treatment teams to identify some of these individuals and what their needs might be, to make sure that we're referring them to places that can meet their needs holistically.
When it comes to, you know, individuals within Columbia County that have co-occurring disorders, what would you say is the percentage of people that you meet, if you look at the Columbia County Mental Health Clinic as a whole, what would be the percentage of people that do have co-occurring disorders?
So the information we get from SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, it's a national organization, the data that they put out is approximately 50% of individuals with a substance use disorder also have a co-occurring disorder. from the conversations that I engage in locally, I believe that number is far greater than 50%.
I would have to agree. Do you think that that comes down to awareness, or do you think that comes down to just people not knowing enough and being able to advocate for themselves to seek treatment? Because, you know, as we spoke about at the beginning, right, stigma isn't just with substance use disorder or mental health. I mean, there's stigmas in every field and with diseases of the human body. I mean, there are always stigma around mm-hmm. those things.
I think what's occurring is that we have outpatient treatment for substance use, and we have outpatient treatment for mental illness, and we have outpatient treatment for medical conditions. And we're all trying to stay in our own lane, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
We're assessing for whatever our organization is treating, and we're not always veering off that lane. But we've found, and something that I will continue to advocate for, is that the best approach for treating somebody with a co-occurring disorder is to offer a holistic or integrated care, ideally in the same setting, right? So if somebody's presenting at the Columbia County Mental Health Center or Twin County Recovery Services or Columbia Memorial Hospital, in the best case scenario, all of their needs are being met in that one setting. But that's not always what we're seeing.
No. But I think that is something that's going around in medical care as a treatment modality now, is that looking at the person as a whole, and that we're not just treating the symptoms and the disease, we're treating how people feel and finding positivity and growth in other areas. And I know a lot of places are offering things that maybe people don't see as treatment, as yoga or meditation classes, you know, things that can really incorporate building the person as a whole, not just treating and looking at the symptoms of a disease diagnosis. So it's wonderful to hear that we're doing that here locally as well.
I mean, it's so important, because individuals who have a co-occurring disorder have a harder time maintaining employment. They have a harder time maintaining housing. They're less likely to remain engaged in treatment for long periods of time, and they're more likely to be involved in the criminal justice system. And what that means for them is that they're spending more time living in places not meant for human habitation. They're living in places like hospitals, in prisons, and jails. So it's so vitally important for our treatment provider system as a whole to understand that piece of it, because this is often the part of our population that falls through the cracks.
You know, I think that's a really valid point. A lot of times people don't realize that these aren't necessarily choices that people make. This is occurrences of a diagnosis that they have. And this can be one of the biggest barriers itself. I think also just with a co-occurring disorder, I can't imagine the amount of time people are spending with providers as well. And to try to hold down a job and or have a career, there has to be difficulties as well for somebody. What are some ways that we can support those that have co-occurring disorder?
So in the treatment world, we often talk about the importance of providing holistic and integrated care. So that means treating the whole person and addressing co-occurring disorders at the same time, ideally within the same setting. I also want to take a moment to speak directly to any treatment providers who might be listening. If this approach resonates with you, but you feel unsure about how to implement it, or feel you lack the resources or training, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'd love to collaborate and support you in feeling confident to support others in this kind of care.
Yeah, it must be, you know, for somebody who may not have the training and or experience working with somebody with a co-occurring disorder, there must be some anxiety around that and some apprehension to treat somebody or not, and then they aren't treated correctly with that holistic approach. I asked our previous guest, if you had a magic wand, what would you wish for and be able to offer those that you work with or maybe work with in the future that isn't available to people now? what would be something that would make your job so much easier? And I know it's going to be money, because we all know that in the human service field. You know, this is something we all struggle with.
I think for me, not that it's not already happening, but if we can get a little more of, is to have a system of care that is compassionate and really meets individuals where they're at and offers a connection to the world, offers that healthy support in a point in somebody's life where they're opening up and trusting that they're not going to be met with judgment, is that we're offering compassion in that moment.
You know, and I think that's where the stigma comes in, right? That we often think that people don't seek out treatment because of those stigmas that are there. And if somebody has the ability to break through that wall, break through that barrier, and finally ask for help when they aren't getting all their needs met, often they stop.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it for somebody with a co-occurring disorder to stay in treatment? Is it something that you found or have learned about, that it is difficult to stay within the treatment system because there's so much going on for that person?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's more complex for them to remain engaged in treatment in the long term, because once you, say, remove the substances from somebody's life, that person is then having all those feelings and emotions and how to manage these emotions thrown back into their life, which they had historically managed with the use of substances. So it's incredibly difficult when both of those things aren't being addressed simultaneously. So if we're removing the drugs, which is great, but not putting skills in place for that individual to manage those difficult times, because early recovery, it sucks.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
Yeah, right.
It's
people,
a slog, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a struggle. Mm-hmm. But we all know in the long term that people have better lives if they remain abstinent. But in the short term, it is so difficult to get through that first 30, 60, 90 days of recovery.
Of course. And then something that we realize is that a lot of times substance use disorder is due to previous trauma in somebody's life. And then, you know, when we look at it that way, now that the substances are gone, sometimes the trauma resurfaces or people are re-triggered and right, those emotions and feelings come up. And that must be a slippery slope, right? The first 30, 60, 90 days, even the first year, I think can be really difficult. So having both treatment modalities available, it sounds like it has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to your personal story, JP, is there anything that was a turning point for you that made you break that barrier? Like, were you yourself feeling stigmatized against that it was difficult for you to, you know, reach out and grab that hand that may have been reaching out to you and receive help and services in order to be the person that you are today?
I feel like in my own life, I experienced an incredible amount of stigma from my own family. And the social constructs that I'd kind of found myself in. I didn't feel like there was a great understanding from my family around what a substance use disorder was and how to effectively support me while I was going through it. I was often told, you know, just stop. What's the big deal? You know, just move on with your life. That kind of language that often put more, I don't even know how to say it.
Well, I think this is, you know, I think that's, if I can, you know, I think that's part of the stigma, is that, you know, people believe that it is a moral failing and that you have complete and utter control and it's just a decision and stop, just stop, you know, and that isn't reality.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it isn't, I think Brian has used the words a few times on some of our shows that sometimes people see it like as a moral defect, or that you're being lazy, or that you're not capable of doing it. And all you have to do is just make the decision and it's done. And, you know, that is part of that education and information that people need to know about, you know, substance use disorder, mental ill. I mean, you name it, any disease that we have, you know, discussed that people get diagnosed with. So I think that's real. That's.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about what are the causes of a substance use disorder or mental illness, we're often talking about the genetics we inherit. Right, the experiences that we've had through our lives and the people, places, and things that we've surrounded ourselves with. In the treatment world, we call that the biopsychosocial model. In my own life, I'll share, my parents were daily drinkers. I don't know if you would consider them alcoholics or not, but they were daily drinkers, and that behavior was so normalized, you know, day to day. I was exposed to it at a very young age. So when my parents separated when I was very young, I feel it had an incredible impact on my life. You know, my sense of belonging, my sense of home, all of that was kind of thrown out the window. And it was made worse in my 20s when I separated from a woman that I fully expected to spend the rest of my life with. All those fears, anxiety, sense of belonging just got even worse.
Yeah, manifested once again, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in my high school years, you know, after my parents divorced, I was desperate for that sense of belonging. So I was trying to attach wherever I could. And unfortunately, I found a group of friends who were using drugs and alcohol regularly. And I didn't so mind the sense of relief that, you know, those drugs offered in that point in my life. So this all happening in the time when the opiate epidemic was kind of really ramping up, the access to prescription opiates was so easy. From a subjective lens, it's not surprising to me looking back that I developed this co-occurring disorder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So what came first, the chicken or the egg? Yep. Nature versus nurture? It's probably a little bit of everything, right?
Well, right. And, you know, genetics also play such a role, right? In many of these co-occurring disorders that we talk about, if somebody has, you know, genetic predisposition to something, and then there's something that triggers that genome in your body,
mm-hmm.
it's off to the races, whatever mm-hmm. that happens to be for a human being. So it just becomes a perfect storm.
Yep. I think there's a common misperception about substance use and drug use as being the problem, when in fact the drug use is the solution to whatever somebody might be experiencing. And a lot of that is a deep-seated feeling of being uncomfortable within your own skin, whether that be due to grief or in social situations or just a general fear of a certain situation. The drug use is actually the solution for many people.
I really appreciate you bringing that up. A lot of times what's missing from the conversation is some acknowledgement that there are real reasons, underlying reasons, why people are using or, mm-hmm. as they say, self-medicating or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, something that we have to start understanding more and pushing that information out to people that a lot of substance use is based off of trauma. You know, we've talked about the ACE score several times, adverse childhood experience. And, you know, that when we look at that and then add genetics on top of it and then add a co-occurring disorder on top of it, right? Like, the difficulties to climb the mountain just become higher and higher. And that probably would push substance use into full gear, maybe even faster for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Because without those coping mechanisms and maybe pain or mental pain or whatever it happens to be, that substance people think is giving relief, you mm-hmm. know? And I love how you said it, like, not comfortable. not comfortable in their skin, not comfortable where you are, I think is such a really lovely way to put it. Because I think a lot of times, and I don't know if that was your experience, but I know, Brian, sometimes when we talk to families that they don't understand why.
Yeah.
And it's not our job to understand why, you know, why a person feels that way or why they use or how come they just can't get over it. Or I've heard, you know, similar words like this, and that just we have to be so sensitive and have that trauma-informed care that is around now, that everybody has their own timeline. Mm-hmm. And that it's so important just to be available for people and let them have those feelings and emotions and to work through it, that we cannot dictate another person's timeline and journey through this.
Yeah, that one size truly doesn't fit all, and everybody's recovery really, really does look different. And along with all of that, being curious about your loved one and why they use is apparently supposed to be a very important factor. I think about what you just said, JP, about your parents maybe feeling like there wasn't any understanding or maybe even curiosity.
It was a simple answer to my parents.
A simple answer, yeah.
And I think that's unfortunately normal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's something that we definitely run into a lot. And it is hard to take that step back. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes that's because people have to also, you know, self-reflect. And then this is where, you know, substance use disorder is not just an individual disease, it's a family disease. And, and I'm not just speaking genetically, you know?
You know, we talk about that saying, addiction is the opposite of connection. Mm-hmm. And I think about that when the family ecosystem isn't connected. Yeah, you feel alone in your struggle, and that seems to be a really critical condition.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, things even your listeners could do is to open up, you know, non-judgmental lines of communication with the people that they care about. And what does that mean? Is to listen actively, right? And not offer unsolicited advice, which is often difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
It's to offer emotional support. And like you said, addiction is the opposite of connection. So, you know, telling somebody that you care about them and actually meaning it. And then also encouraging self-care. One of the greatest predictors of wellness is the depth and quality of our closest relationships. So if somebody doesn't have somebody like that in our lives, that's where a treatment provider could be really useful. Everybody has a family member or friend that they can confide in and trust, but it's so vitally important in somebody's recovery from mental illness and addiction.
The depth and quality of one's relationship, mm-hmm. right there.
And also I appreciate that, because those are words that I share a lot with the youth that we work with. Is I want you to have one person in this building. I don't care who it is. I don't care what they look like. I don't care if they're a teacher to you, if they're the hall monitor, if they work in the cafeteria, if they're your bus driver, if there is just one human that you can reach out to and feel comfortable to talk to, that's what's really important. A lot of times people do feel that it has to be family or close friends, but I think there again, the stigma rides in, because we don't want to share those fragilities of our own human psyche and being with people, because we want people to look at us a certain way. So JP, you know, we just want to thank you for coming by today and in informing everybody about your role and providing that education and information that we know is so vital to the residents here of Columbia and Greene County. Coming to the airwaves, I think, is just another modality for us to continue to give people that education and information. But as we're closing out, do you have any final words that you want to say about yourself or your role with Columbia County Mental Health?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity you've given me to come on and talk with you and hopefully touch some of the listeners that you have. And I just want everyone to know that I'm here to help. I'm here to help.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to Prevention on Point. My name's Brian.
And I'm Tara, and you're listening to us on WGXC, Acre Catskill Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you.
a quick note to say that our conversation with JP was actually so rich that episode 2 with JP Cahill will be coming in August, and we hope you'll tune back in. Thanks again for listening.